Let me talk a little bit about why this has had such an enormous appeal. It's a real page-turner of a novel, of course. Those of you who have read it know just how it keeps you going. It's not the world's finest literature, it's not the world's finest film, but they're both fun. And it's a great adventure, a thriller. It's got 105 chapters plus a prologue and an epilogue, and nearly every one of those chapters ends in a cliffhanger. And they're so short that you think, oh, it's quite late, it's 1:30 in the morning, but the next chapter's only 2 pages, so maybe I'll just read one more, and just one more, and just one more. If it was a 20-page chapter, then you'd just stop at a sensible time, or at least that was my experience. So it's fun. Then it also is full of mystery and suspense. It has puzzles and codes. It's full of cover-ups and secrets. There are riddles and enigmas, all kinds of mysterious things. For me, one of the real strengths of the book, perhaps the greatest strength of the book, is the puzzles and codes and things within it. I thought they were great fun. And all that kind of stuff is really what got me hooked on it. It's also full of dead ends and red herrings, not least of which is this man, Alfred Molina, playing Bishop Arringa Rosa, which means red herring. I think another factor in its appeal is it's a very anti-establishment novel. We have lost confidence in Western society, in authority generally. We've had a succession of political scandals in Britain and in Western culture generally. I remember hearing about Watergate as quite a young kid, and it feels that almost every few weeks since then I've heard about some political scandal or other. And we've just lost confidence in politicians and in all kinds of other authorities. Coupled to that is that people love sensationalist tabloid journalism. They love exposés that blow apart some institution or other, that show us just how corrupt and broken and terrible it really is. And people, of course, love conspiracy theories. All those are very closely related. And this book and film feeds on all of that in a very significant way. Dan Brown himself is very much like his key character, Robert Langdon, I think. And the book says that Langdon viewed the world as a web of profoundly intertwined histories and events. The connections may be invisible, but they are always there, buried just beneath the surface. Dan Brown denies that he's a conspiracy theorist, but he does love these connections. And he's tied together the most disparate things within the book, things that actually, in real life, are completely unconnected. But he makes these wonderful, elaborate links between them to construct his story. Also in Western culture, we are distrustful of received truth. We're not just distrustful of authority, but of received wisdom and of truth that's handed down for us. There's been an enormous shift in Western culture over the recent decades from valuing objectivity first and foremost to valuing personal subjectivity first and foremost. And we're downplaying objectivity to a much larger degree now. Coupled with that is a disdain for any grand belief systems, any overarching ways of thinking about the world that provide explanations for everything. Things like Christianity, Marxism, atheism as a whole perhaps, Islam. We're very reluctant in the West to take on board those kind of huge explanations that try and force everything into a grid. Again, related to this is a suspicion of any claims to truth. We often tend to assume that anybody who's claiming that they're telling the truth is actually just trying to manipulate us in some way or to have power over us. And maybe you feel like that about me. Not a lot I can do about that, I guess, isn't it? But we'll see where we go. Another big thing is that it's got this big strand of rejecting orthodox traditional religion, Christianity, in view of this radical new interpretation. A secret, says Lee Teabing, the Ian McKellen character, as you heard just now, that could threaten the very foundations of mankind. Dan Brown denies that it's an anti-religion book. He says this book is not anti-anything. It's a novel. Well, yes, it is a novel. And there have been plenty of people who said, why are we making so much fuss about a novel? Not even a good novel in many ways. The reason is that Dan Brown himself keeps saying the same kind of things in real life as he said in his novel. And he has this page at the beginning, headed Fact, where he gives us a couple of supposed facts, one about this organisation called the Priory of Zion, one about a Catholic organisation called Opus Dei, and then a little comment at the bottom about every document and place in the book is factual. And because of that claim to fact at the beginning of the book, and because of what he says in interviews and on his website, that actually does add up to more than just a novel. Yes, it is a novel, but it is a novel with an agenda. This rejection of religion thing is important because we do live in an age which is cynical about traditional orthodox historical Christianity as it's been understood for the last two millennia. We are very distrustful of it on the whole in the West. And so plenty of attention is given to some of the shameful periods of church history, and there have been some very shameful periods of church history. The Crusades obviously get talked about in this novel, and the witch trials during the Inquisition and so on, the suppression of women down through history. He overplays all of these things, misrepresents quite a number of them, but nevertheless there are some deeply shameful periods of church history for which the church just has to say, yeah, that's true, and live with it. As I say, it is being overplayed, rather. But it does mean that we feel then that the church and Christians themselves often are steeped in hypocrisy, that there's nothing good in it anymore. Here's a quote from the film. This is Ian McKellen's Lee Teabing character speaking. For 2,000 years, the church has rained oppression and atrocity upon mankind, crushed passion and idea alike, all in the name of that walking God. Proof of Jesus' mortality will put an end to all that suffering, drive this church of lies to its knees. The living heir must be revealed. Jesus must be shown for what he was, not miraculous, simply man. The dark con must be exposed. Mankind can finally be set free, and we can do it, Robert. This great kind of call to bring the church crashing down around us. And that resonates with people. It resonates with people when they're reading the book that almost everything our fathers taught us about Christ is false. But while it's an anti-religion novel, it's not anti-spirituality at all. Spirituality is a big, big thing in this book. Particularly the search for the sacred feminine and goddess spirituality. We won't talk much about goddess spirituality this morning. But the search for spirituality within it is absolutely central. I think this is the major thing of interest of all of it. This is... Why does a conspiracy theory novel it's a great page turner of a novel full of riddles and so on. Yes, it's anti-establishment, but why does it grab people's attention quite to the extent that it has done? Why has it sold 40 million copies? Is it simply that it's good fun read, or is it because of the search for spirituality that's within it? Because we do still long for spirituality. Preferably a spirituality that is mysterious and esoteric, and is particularly non-challenging. One that isn't going to demand a lot of us, that allows us to be ourselves and to do what we like, but nevertheless helps us to feel that we're in touch with another dimension to life. And the impact of feminism on Western culture has made the focus on the sacred feminine within the book extremely attractive. He's a very good marketing guy. He knows how to write a novel that presses all the right buttons, the conspiracy theory button and all the rest of it, and how to bring in particular, a huge female audience. That may be a slightly over-cynical view of his writing style. He does say that my hope in writing this novel was that the story would serve as a catalyst and a springboard for people to discuss the important topics of faith, religion and history. Absolutely right. And I am so grateful to Dan Brown for writing this book. You know, we're here this morning because we wanted to be here. Well, probably just wanted for breakfast, actually. Some of you are here this morning because you wanted to talk about this. You wanted to hear what we had to say about it. Because faith and religion and history, they are hugely important subjects. And we recognise the need to discuss them, particularly in the kind of world that we live in at the moment. And this really has served as an incredible catalyst for discussions about these things at a scale that I don't ever remember seeing within general culture. Dan Brown himself describes himself as a spiritual seeker, being on a spiritual quest. He says, I really wish I had the luxury of absolute unquestioning faith. I do not. And I'm still searching. I wrote this novel as part of my own spiritual quest. You need to take that first comment just with a little pinch of salt, where he says, I really wish I had the luxury of absolute unquestioning faith, because he says that elsewhere in such a way that suggests that he thinks that people who do seem to have absolute unquestioning faith are arrogant and being exclusivist, and that's really not the right way to be at all. So there's slightly double-edged comments at the beginning there. We'll leave that on one side for now. Here's one of his other comments. Some of my critics seem absolutely certain of their truth, and of that I am envious. As I said, I was not born with the luxury of absolute certainty. Well, nobody's born with the luxury of absolute certainty. It's a slightly pejorative way of talking about it there, I think.